Save big on everything for your next staining project when you shop at Menards. Transform your home in one weekend with exterior stain and sealer from Dutch Boy. It provides one coat protection on decks, fences, siding, and outdoor furniture, and repels rain after just 4 hours of application. That means quicker results, saving you both time and money. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham wants to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. And we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we buy the Tottenham white.
And still Ricky.
Going on to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh,
it's a record! Here's Lucas Moura. Oh, they've done it!
Well, greetings, everybody. Welcome to the first Tottenham Way podcast of 2025. I'm Marcus Buckland. Apologies for being a little croaky. That's partly down to tune a team on in the second half, in particular against Newcastle today, and also partly because of this horrendous bug that seems to be affecting everybody, including, of course, a number of Tottenham players. Fortunately, Tom Barkley, the son, is in magnificently rude health. He was at the game. He's been at Ange Postecoglou's press conference. And Tom, I want to get straight into that because, OK, we lost the match. I thought we played really well in the second half in particular. Ange, from all accounts, was fuming, not at the manner of the performance or from any silly questions that you or the other Tom or Danny Kaye might have asked, but I think primarily because of the handball decision that, of course, was of major effect to the first goal and maybe one or two other things as well. Tell us exactly what he's been saying.
Yeah, hi Marcus. Sorry to hear you're feeling as rough as some of the Spurs squad. But Ange was frustrated in the press conference, not with journalists. There was no sort of snappy remarks. He just looked like a man who was really, really frustrated from the afternoon. He said it was the angriest he'd ever been as a manager. And the reason for that was he felt his team were, denied a result that they deserved. He was asked a few times about this specific incident leading up to the first Newcastle goal, which Anthony Gordon scored, which levelled it up at 1-1, where the ball struck Joel Linton's hand. So the lead, what had happened, basically, Lucas Bergvall was sort of bursting away from the Spurs box, played a pass. It hits Joel Linton's hand, which is down quite low. Goes straight to Bruno Guimaraes, who passes it to Anthony Gordon, who tucks it away neatly past Brandon Austin. In his mind, he didn't say it explicitly, but it was clear from the way he was talking about it, he felt that was an injustice and felt like it robbed his team effectively. And we asked a few times if he meant specifically officiating. He basically said, I don't want to sort of name names or be specific, but he did say, whatever you think about the, whether it was handball, whether it wasn't or not, it was clear. And if it had been I think the phrase was fair and level playing field, then we would have got a result today. So it's pretty obvious what he was annoyed at. And I don't know, it's an interesting one. I mean, from where I'm sitting for this incident, so the goal goes in, it then goes to VAR. I think a lot of fans and a lot of the players, and it's clearly the coaching staff, because Postecoglou was going nuts on the touchline, were sort of hoping that it would be overruled by VAR. For me, I think this is a prime example of the law being an ass, as they say, rather than the officiating. Because where Joel Linton's hand is, by the letter of the law, it is, they would argue, in a natural position. And so therefore, they're not going to rule it out. So I get that. And that's why I'm not blaming the referee or the VAR. But it is a ludicrous situation because it's had such a massive influence from it hitting his hand, going completely the other direction when Spurs were taking the ball up the pitch, that it then goes straight to Guimaraes and Anthony Gordon score. And without that happening, there was no way Newcastle score at that point. It was a crunch moment for Spurs. So I totally sympathise with all Spurs fans, with his team and Postecoglou in particular over this. But for me, I think it's more a situation where the law needs to be changed rather than having it in specifically for those who are implementing it.
Yeah, well, that's a talking point. I think we should make it abundantly clear here that Tom's actually a Newcastle fan, but he's going to remain strictly neutral throughout this. I mean, Newcastle have had a terrific run of results of late. I mean, one thing I will say at your team, and it reminded me a bit of Sheffield United last season, some of the time wasting. I mean, we played more than 10 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the second half. Every Newcastle player seemed to be crashing to the ground with a life-threatening injury that took 3 or 4 minutes to clear up. And Spurs, you know, never really got into any sustained momentum, partly as a result of that. And I know people go, oh, well, don't worry, the time's added on, etc., etc. But you do lose your motivation in the same way that that controversial decision to give Newcastle their equaliser had a real effect on what happened throughout the rest of the first half. And I suppose we shouldn't really grab at straws in that manner. Spurs lost the game. Let me be more constructive, Tom. The second half in particular, and let's bear in mind that Dragosin had gone off at halftime. Suddenly, Jen Spence is partnering Archie Gray in the centre of defence. Serge Reguilón, who's barely played for 3 years, is operating down the left flank for most of the second half. Certainly, despite that, were you as encouraged as I was by that Tottenham performance? I mean, you know, they could easily, I think, have won the game. Never mind draw or, as it happened, lose it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of fans will look to another defeat. And that's one win in eight. That's three losses in their last five home league games, of which they're all winless. Obviously, there's context to that with injuries. Postecoglou knows by now that his fans don't want to hear that. And that is the bottom line, I suppose. But put it this way, I came out of that game feeling more optimistic. And you say I'm a Newcastle fan. I mean, I grew up a Newcastle fan, but I do have sort of, obviously I cover Spurs, so I'm invested in this now as well.
We have accepted you into our midst, Tom. You are a prize part of this project.
I came out of that game and I was definitely feeling more optimistic going into the Liverpool game than I was after the Wolves game, for example. It was a much better performance. And more sort of a bigger point to that, regarding Postecoglou's future, because the way it's been going, you know, people start talking and fans start calling. Well, I don't know, to be honest, I haven't really heard it in the stands. There was only, to be honest, the only time I've seen a dissension towards Postecoglou was at the end of that Bournemouth game. And that may well have been specifically because, well, A, the nature of the performance, but B, the fact he didn't go over to the away fans at first. It seemed to really irk them. So generally, the fans in the ground have been pretty behind him. But obviously, there's a whole bunch of people online who are thinking differently. And there's a lot of people who have question marks, yourself included, who whether this his whole approach will ever be successful long term. But one thing that I definitely witnessed from today's second half performance in particular was that this team is still trying to play for him. They're still trying to do their best to play for a manager. Often when you get a run of results like this, if players start to sort of lose faith in the manager, or they sense like a change is coming, that, you know, we've seen it so many times, they stop putting in the same amount of effort. That's definitely not the case here. They were continuing to play his style of play, even with all those injuries and illness. And as you mentioned, Dragosin was one of those players who was bedridden, along with Archie Gray and Fraser Forston this week, from illness. And fair play to Gray, carried on. But Dragosin had to come off at half time, so they had literally no natural centre backs playing. And they, you're right, they had chances. I mean, Solanke right at the end. I thought Solanke was brilliant today, by the way. But he did have a great chance at the end, which he could have put away. Johnson hits the post from that rebound, from that star shot. Reguilón, you know, coming on. And to be honest, this shot actually went out for a throw-in. But it was an acute angle. But it was there were chances. And I feel encouraged by that, given what we've seen at times of late.
Yeah, I would totally concur with that. It was the youngest starting 11 from Spurs in the Premier League since March 2015. I totally agree with you about Solanke up front. He is such a physical presence. Took his goal really well. He holds the ball up brilliantly. I mean, they're pretty rugged at the back, Newcastle, and he was being wrestled the whole time, but he gave as good as he got. But for me, the standout performer, and I did get frustrated when he was substituted after 61 minutes, and a few people have said to me, look, it's game management. He's a young player. You've got to be careful. And, you know, with the benefit of an hour or so to calm down, I will accept that. But Lucas Bergvall, to me, Tom, today showed what we have been aware of. He arrived at Tottenham, you know, with a lot of expectation on his shoulders. He chose Spurs ahead of Barcelona. I thought he was magnificent today. And, hopefully that is the start of something very special.
Yeah, and a really good game. I mean, I suppose some Spurs fans will turn around and say, oh, we've been calling for him to be playing for ages. Look at this. Now he's playing well. But that is slightly rewriting history to a certain extent, because I remember being at Galatasaray and watching him hold on to the ball too long and Spurs conceding as a result. I don't think he actually impressed that much for me in those opening months, given that I remember doing an interview with Pape Sarr in August, asking about the new signings, which one he'd be most impressed by. And he said Bergvall by a long way, tipped him to be one of the best players in the world. So obviously the expectation on what he could eventually become was raised, but there's no doubt he's a real talent on the ball. And he seems to be learning those sort of moments that I was talking about. The Galatasaray game doesn't seem to be happening as much, not holding onto the ball as much, but he's also driving with the ball. When he gets the chance, like we saw, you know, from all the clips when he was in Sweden, the reason why I sort of, my mind when watching those clips before he'd signed, sort of cast my mind to Jude Bellingham with the way he drives the ball. We saw that today in the opening goal, the way he drove the ball forward, then gave to Johnson and gives it to Porro. Brilliant cross, Shearer-esque header from Solanke. Wonderful goal. It was, it was a really encouraging performance. And then I was interested when he came off, that I thought the initial reaction was booing for him being subbed off and Maddison being brought on, not specifically for Maddison being brought on, but just the fact that Bergvall was coming off. And that's what Dan Kilpatrick, sitting next to me, thought as well. And then after the game, it was pointed out by some of the other journalists that it also coincided with what you were talking about earlier about Newcastle's sort of time-wasting play-acting, whatever you want to call it, of Anthony Gordon being down for a long time and then getting up. So from where you were sitting, was that booing towards the Bergvall sub or was it towards Anthony Gordon?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a really good question. I thought it was, certainly a lot of people near me, we were really disappointed to see Bergvall go off. And then others rightly said, look, he's still young. He's possibly run himself into the ground. They want to give Maddison some time as well because he's suspended come Wednesday for the cup tie. So I don't know. There was a little bit of confusion perhaps. And I'm certainly, although I was critical on social media immediately after that decision by Postecoglou, because just the range of Bergvall's passing, the way he was driving forward, so much confidence. I mean, if he was one of the players who was ill this week, he certainly wasn't showing any signs of that. And I'd love to have seen another 5 or 10 minutes. But I'm not quite sure. I am intrigued. I don't know, again, whether you've got any insight into the team selection today, because obviously Maddison and Sarr are suspended for the cup game on Wednesday. So it was no surprise to see Sarr start and Basuma come on a bit later. Now, Maddison, was he one of the players who was ill? It kind of otherwise, although I was delighted to see Bergvall, struck me as, well, surely Maddison starts this game at least because he can't play next Wednesday.
Indeed. So I found this an absolutely intriguing subplot over the last 24 hours or so, because at the press conference on Friday, I asked about Maddison just a general question about, you know, because on the face of it, he should be the poster boy of Ange Ball and his numbers are actually pretty good this season. And yet he's sort of in and out of the team and you're not even surprised now when he starts a game on the bench. So what's going on? And Ange, in his response, actually kind of revealed last week the reason he was supposed to start against Wolves. That was the plan. And then he came a lot, but then he was sick. He was too ill to start. He did obviously come off the bench in the 64th minute in that game, and that, which is intriguing, because then he then did go out to the darts later that evening, which I know some fans were already sort of giving him a bit of stick for, because I guess Spurs is poor form. Personally, you know, Ange had been given the players 2 days off, from then, and I've got no problem with players, particularly with the schedule, having a bit of time off. But then my opinion on that was slightly not changed, but kind of, it was interesting. Like, if he actually had been ill to not, and he was supposed to start, that is interesting. I do wonder how Spurs fans would take that. Although Ange was asked, you know, by Dan, actually, were you okay with him going to the darts? He said, yeah, he had no problem with it. He then trained this week. And then because he was suspended, as you say, for Liverpool, I just presumed he'd be in the starting lineup. So the fact that he wasn't was intriguing. But neither were Bissouma and nor were Son. So it did feel like, I think a lot of the talk ahead of the game was a bit like this was a similar situation to when Poch after that, this is before my time, but do you remember when they won at Aston, you will remember well, when they won at Aston Villa and Harry Kane scored that last minute goal and he suddenly went with the kids and went down that route instead? Was the sort of question mark, is this kind of Ange's time where he's going down this route instead? You can talk about all of those individuals. I think Son's performances for such a wonderful player for this club have been way off it, really, to be honest, in recent weeks. You know, the odd game, West Ham, Southampton, but both of those sides have been pretty woeful this season. So I don't think that's really enough evidence to sort of deny the fact that he's been in a bit of a slump this season. Bissouma blows hot and cold, really, doesn't he? But it was interesting to see Bovall start. It was interesting to see Maddison not start, given that he can't play in the week. But then again, Maddison, when he came on, I actually thought he did play quite well. He went very close with that sort of shot slash cross that went very, very close. And Ange was asked after the game about leaving the three of those players out. And I can read you out his response, basically. He said, just a combination of, I thought we were going to need some running power and energy early on as the game went on, we would be able to use the experience of the guys who came on, and I thought it worked well. We finished really strong. We started the game really well, and the only thing that stopped us in our tracks was not football. Back to this decision about the thing. That was the whole idea about it. Guys like Sonny Biss and Maddison, to a lesser extent, they have played a lot of football, and having them fresh helps them mentally as much as physically. And I thought all three of them came on and made a real difference. I mean, it's interesting. Like, I think the way he argues it is quite fair. They definitely have played a lot of games. I did think it actually worked. You know, Ange has been criticised for substitutions this season or not making them. I do think, I know they lost the game, so you could argue it didn't work, but actually, I do think they had a positive impact, and the team that started played well too. I just think it's interesting now that up until now, he's generally lent on the senior players, particularly when the results have been going a bit sideways and he's been needing results. For him to sort of change it up for this game was a little bit of a surprise, and one that I wasn't expecting.
No, but I just wonder, this could be totally wrong, but I'm hoping deep down that in 2 or 3 years' time, when Spurs are top of the league and winning everything, we'll look back to this period and today in particular and go, you know what, we had to go through a really tough winter of discontent, 2024-25, but for various reasons, lots of young players were finally given a chance and they seized that chance because some of these players are really good. There's no doubt about that. I mean, Gray playing out of position, as we know, when he eventually gets into his more favoured midfield role, I think he's going to be a revelation. Bergvall starting to show what he can do. Jed Spence. I mean, now it is a mystery as to why it took so long for him to come into the side. The list is, well, it's not endless, but there's plenty of names there. And I think it would be remiss of us not to mention the goalkeeper, who, I mean, there was that horrendous...
One that's signing or the one who started?
No, but the one that actually started, Brandon Austin, today. Although I was terrified that he was going to have to come off early in the second half. There was a lady sitting next to me who had gloves on. She was all ready to deputise. But he had a few awkward things to deal with. And I think he can look back on his debut with a lot of pride, can't he?
Yeah, you joke. There's a member of the Spurs sort of media team who I couldn't score past during the media game last year. We were joking that he might have to get his gloves on at that point. Brandon Austin, to be like, for a bit of context, this is a guy who's been at the club nearly 10 years, and this was literally his first competitive appearance for Spurs. His first competitive game for a senior level for 4 years since a loan spell to the MLS in Orlando City. I mean, it'd be a fascinating interview at some point, maybe, if you could really open up about this kind of slightly bizarre experience of these kind of third, fourth choice goalkeepers who never seem to play. But he comes into the team with Forster bedridden all week. And I thought he did well. I thought he was quite good with his feet. There was actually a moment, you probably blink and you miss it, because it actually happened between the two goals, the first two goals, which was only 2 minutes apart, where he came to claim a corner and there was a loud, resounding, let's be honest, ironic cheer from the crowd, given the struggles from set pieces. Or maybe it was just a sort of his first involvement. So maybe it was maybe I'm being unfair, maybe it was a sort of morale boosting, well done son kind of situation. And he made a decent stop from, might have been Gordon, in the first half. He was pretty solid, but having said that, Spurs literally before the game, I got there to the ground. I normally get a couple of hours early and you sort of, get ready for the match. It was pretty frantic because the news broke that they're about to sign this new goalkeeper. So I can give you a little bit of information about him. I've been swatting up. I can't claim to have known too much about him before today, if anything at all. His name's Antonin Kinski. He's 21. He's a Czech under 21 international. He's been the number one for Slavia Prague, who are top of the Czech league, 7 points clear. He's kept 12 clean sheets in 19 games. And as I was leaving the ground today, I get, as a journalist, I get a lot of emails from various places, PR companies that come in. I had one such one that came in from a organization that had interviewed his old coach with some quotes from him, including basically billing him as the next Peter Cech. So no pressure, Antonin.
Right. Great. Oh, here we go. He's not even arrived and he's the new Peter Cech. Oh, dear, dear. Well, so a couple of things on that. Is he eligible to play against Liverpool on Wednesday if selected?
Well, so we didn't ask Ange about it because we ran out of time. And also, to be honest, after a game like that, and normally when a player hasn't signed, the manager's sort of loath to say anything. But there have been some reports that he was in London today. The Spurs sources are suggesting he wasn't. So I don't quite know what the timeline is. He has to undergo his medical. The transfer fee has been reported by some places that it's about effectively 12.5 million plus add-ons. But I've also heard 10 million, so I'm not quite sure on that. But I don't know. It'd be a quick turnaround to get him involved for this game. But he's been clearly playing regularly, hasn't he? So he should be fresh on that front. But to throw him in for this Liverpool game, well, I mean, to be honest, if Forster is still ill, then, you know, Brandon Austin's only played one game in the last 4 years. So I don't know. But normally, knowing how these things work, I'd be surprised, but I suppose there's four days till,
not long.
Till it. So maybe. Yeah.
Well, listen, if that turns out to be Brandon Austin's only appearance for the club, he can be very proud of it. And there is certainly a bit of a question mark as to why we have a lot of young players who, for whatever reason, just don't get a chance. And, you know, anyway, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We only see what's in front of us. I mean, the next question, and it's impossible for you to answer now, but the fact Dragosin went off at halftime, so he obviously was feeling ill. Do we have any idea at this stage as to what the back four, never mind the goalkeeper, the back four is going to look like against Liverpool on Wednesday?
So.
Because we had the reports yesterday that, you know, the big guns, none of them are going to be back before the end of January, so it's still bare bones, isn't it?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up, to be honest. So Van der Ven, Ben Davis and Romero all out to the end of January. That's what Ange said on Friday, so they're out. Dragosin, Ange said he was shattered because he'd been in bedridden, as he put it, all week. So you've got to hope that if it's literally just fatigue, that he'll be okay by Wednesday. So I imagine it will be the same. And obviously your doggy's injured as well, so I would have thought it'd be the same starting back four. But if somehow, some reason, Dragosin can't get through or someone else goes... I mean, the thing with Spurs right now, it's just like, what's next? it's been a long time since I've seen anything like it. I mean, to be fair, Newcastle, 12 months ago, when they got battered 4-1 by Tottenham, when they were going through a really rough time, they were having some crazy injuries. And it just shows you that, you know, for what everyone's saying about Postecoglou and his approach, if you lose those kind of like key members of your team, particularly at the back, I mean, how are you supposed to? Just so difficult because the level of competition is so high. It's just so difficult.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It also, you know, I'm not going to go too hard on the manager, but I kind of think it makes it much easier for him in a way because, yeah, well, listen, guys, what can we do? And so we just got to be careful. I mean, I look at the league table. We now 24 points from 20 played. You know, Ipswich 15 points at the moment. We're not, I don't think, going to get involved in a relegation battle. That sounds absurd. And I don't think Manchester United are either. But it's an intriguing stage in the season, Tom. And I just think, look, the league, to me, it's gone. We'll finish somewhere between probably 7th and 13th, and so be it. But if these young players really do bed down as a result of their experiences and the club can buy sensibly in January and then in the summer, I'm retaining optimism. I don't know whether that makes me a fool or not, but I just do have a little bit of belief, bizarrely, back having seen another home defeat.
Well, one thing I would say is there's been a lot of talk about apathy amongst the Spurs fan base of late and a sort of acceptance of how things are going. And I didn't sense that at all in the stadium today. I felt a lot of frustration at the what the perceived injustice, just like Postecoglou, and a lot of passion for this team. So I don't think apathy felt right, the right word to describe the mood in the ground today at all. I suppose, you know, my point about, you know, what's he supposed to do and how difficult it is. I mean, I do think it is a fair criticism, and he's obviously not going to change his approach. He said it a million times before, to the point where it's pointless us asking about it. But that, just because that's his opinion, doesn't make it mean it's the right way of going at it. And I'm obviously a journalist. I'm not a football, you know, manager. So, you know, it's only my opinion, but you're speaking to people around the game. I do think there is a question mark over whether he could have maybe adapted a little bit during this crisis when you've got Fraser Forster in goal instead of Vicario. But that's happened and he's stuck with it. And his view is, no, we're going to play this way. It's going to be better for us in the long run. I suppose my hope for him, because I like him, is that he can weather this storm, and the storm doesn't sort of engulf him from being so puritanical during that period, when if he just adapted a bit to get through it, he could then go back to it, which has been my point pretty much throughout his whole tenure. You don't have to throw away all your principles just to make a few tweaks here and there in the odd game when you've got team selection issues or you're playing facing certain opposition. But he doesn't see it that way. And that's part of the reason why it's so thrilling and fun to cover it, particularly as a neutral. But, you know, whether it will end up a success story for him or not, I think the jury's still out.
Yeah, it is. But you're right. The players are still clearly playing for him. There was passion today. I think Newcastle's skullduggery got certainly to some of us as Spurs fans, but that's just part and parcel of it. So we'll dust ourselves down. We'll hope that there are 11 fit players on Wednesday night. And I just hope, Tom, final point, you know, whatever happens, I hope Spurs are still in the tie after 90 minutes next Wednesday. I think that's really important that they give a decent account of themselves. You know what? I liked Sonny coming off the bench today. I think he is exhausted. We know he's been struggling. I think he could be a threat coming off the bench. I'm not going to try and pick Ange's team, but I think start him on the bench, see what the situation is, and let's hope that there's some hope going to Anfield for the second leg, and of course Tamworth as well. Tommy B, thank you very much. Tom Barkley of The Sun, I am Marcus Buckland. 2025 has begun with a defeat. There's a lot to look forward to, though. Let us keep the faith as always. Come on, you Spurs.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.